Good morning. You feel good? I'd love for you to turn to John chapter 11 with me this morning. I want to take us to a fairly familiar portion of Scripture. It's the scene with Lazarus. And if I had one wish this morning, it is that I wish you didn't know the end of the story. I wish that I could tell you this story for the very first time. In fact, if there's anybody in the room and this is the first time you're hearing this story, oh, I'm so excited about that. I'm so excited to be the first one to get to tell this story to you. For the rest of you, I'm going to ask, I don't know how you do it, but I want you to put yourself in some kind of mind frame where you hold off on knowing the end of the story. Okay? And so you listen to it and you follow along as though you don't know what's going to happen, as though you were there with them, but you don't know Paul Harvey's the rest of the story. Okay? I know that's going to be tough because it's so familiar. It's a story. It is a portion of history that talks about death and dying. And many people would read this story and think that the death and the dying applies to this man Lazarus. But I would tell you that there is a lot of death and dying going on in this story, more than just this man Lazarus. There is a lot of loss and a lot of hurt and a lot of grief that is happening in many people's lives in this story. And so not only is this man Lazarus, who many of us know, dies, but there's a dying, there's a loss that's happening in many of the people here. And so if you're in John chapter 11, I'm going to read some scripture and I'm going to tell portions of the story. Just follow along, okay? So we pick up in John chapter 11 and we find that this man Lazarus is sick. And so his sisters, Mary and Martha, it says that they send word to Jesus, because we find out in the story that Lazarus and Mary and Martha, they're friends of Jesus. And so they send out some messengers and they say, go to Jesus and tell him that Lazarus is sick. Now, whether you know it or not, I believe that there is an expectation that is placed on Jesus at that moment. If you just listen to the story, gather the relationships, you've got friends of Jesus. It says later on that Jesus loved Lazarus. And so if you're in a relationship with somebody where you know that person loves you, then when you're in need, love has an expectation, right? That somebody's going to do something. And after all, this is Jesus. And so there's an expectation that Jesus is going to come. But instead, Jesus makes this really strange statement. Sometimes I look at the statements that Jesus made and I said, and you wonder why nobody wanted to follow you, Jesus. You know, but it's because you say strange stuff. And so he looks at these messengers and it says in verse 4, but when Jesus heard this, he said, this sickness is not to end in death, but for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by it. And I can just imagine the messenger saying, so are you coming or not? And Jesus is like, I'm not coming. And they're like, you're not coming? What do you mean you're not coming? And I would stop there and I would say that many of us, we have prayed and we have asked God to do something and we've had an expectation that He would even do something. But then He doesn't do it like we thought He would do it. Is there anybody in the room like that? That you've prayed about something and you wanted God to do something. You had an expectation, but He didn't do what you thought He would do. He didn't come, you thought. I thought He would come. He didn't come. And many times there's a word that God will give. In this case, He gives them the answer that they need. He gives them these words that should have satisfied. But oftentimes when we have an expectation, we stop listening, right? Because we know how this thing's supposed to go down in our mind. And so many of us, we've prayed and we know how we want this thing to go. And then Jesus has these words tucked away in Scripture and we're like, don't bother me with the details. Jesus, I know how this thing's supposed to work. And so there's this death of this expectation. I can't even imagine those folks going back to Mary and Martha and she says, you couldn't find him? Oh, no, we found him. Is he coming? He's not coming. You can imagine this death inside of them. Lazarus is sick. And for whatever reason, He ain't coming. And then Lazarus dies, we find out. And at that moment, you can imagine that these folks who just knew that Jesus was coming, now they're faced with the death of the one that they loved. And I bet before he died, they were imagining if Jesus comes, they had this vision of Lazarus raised up from sickness, being brought back into being well and being made whole. And at that moment when he breathed his last, the vision died. And many of us have had hopes, and you've had dreams, and you've had visions, and they died. Anybody ever had a vision die? You had a word, you thought, from the Lord of what was going to happen. You had a picture in your mind of something that the Lord had called you to. It was whatever you want to call it. It was a hope. It was an aspiration. It was a dream. It was a vision. And then it died. I want to tell you today that oftentimes your dreams have to die. They oftentimes have to die. The vision that you have, it oftentimes has to die. And so it died with them. Just to give you a for instance, I've walked through ministry. I know I look young, but I've been in ministry for 15 years. I know I don't look that old, but I have. My wife's rolling her eyes. And I've watched over and over again. Visions die. And I'll tell you about one in particular. We had a ministry that we were working with Department of Social Services, and there was this lady, I believe her name was Tara, and she would call us and she'd say, there's a need over at DSS. There's a family who's taking a child and they need a bed. And we'd go and we'd take them a bed. They need an air conditioner. In order for DSS to prove the house, we go put in an air conditioner. They need heat, or this person's not going to have a way to make it through the cold. And I never met this lady, Tara. She had been working through one of the ladies here at the church, Kim Sconyers, who works at Catawba Mental Health. And so they were taking care of most everything. And one day, I had to drop off a set of heaters for her. And I got to meet her for the first time. I think that was on a Friday. Tara died in a car accident on that weekend. And Tara died, and that ministry died. And we were like, man, we thought something was really good going to happen there. We thought we were going to be able to minister to families in some of the darkest, most desperate moments of their lives. But she was the contact. So what do we do now? There's nobody else that seemed to have a passion for it. And so it died. But there was something different about it. You know, there are times where things die and they're supposed to, right? You didn't have any business doing it anyway. And it's like your heart immediately just cuts and moves on to the next thing. It hardly even bothers you. It's just like, okay, that wasn't supposed to be, and you move on. But there are times where God gives you something and it births inside of you, and then it dies. But you can't get rid of it. It's still at it. I think I'm still supposed to go do that thing. I think I'm still supposed to be involved in this. And it just stays there. And I would tell you that there are times where it dies because the Lord has to bring it back to life in such a way that it's not about you anymore. It's about Him. And you see, what happened is we waited for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And that same lady, Kim Sconyers, had a meeting over at DSS. And one of the folks said, you know what? I remember back when we used to do some stuff with you guys. And she said, yeah, we sure did. That was a really good thing. And he said, you know what? We probably ought to start trying to do that again. That was a good thing. And we were like, wow, maybe God's breathing on this thing again. And then there was a couple, and they had started visiting, and they had this cute little boy. He was just born. So Alan and Audrey, Brian, would come in, and it took me about 2 months to find them because they had a little boy and he was brand new, and you know they needed to keep people and germs and all that stuff away from him. And I finally got to meet him, and guess where she used to work? DSS. And guess what she had a heart for? That exact ministry. And I have watched God take something that we thought was dead, but our heart was still in it, and just breathe life on it. And I'm telling you that some of you today may have had a dream or a vision or a hope or an aspiration, and it felt like that thing died. But if it's still inside of you somehow, I would say, you just hold on. Okay? Just hold on. Because God's got this amazing way of letting us come to an end of ourselves, and then He just breathes on it. I went over to the warehouse this past week, and we've got cribs, and we've got beds, and we've got furniture, and it's all down the side of this warehouse for people who are waiting for those very things. And I said, isn't that cool? Because there's a family, they think they've got a need. But God's already got a supply. Isn't that cool? See, that's how He works. You say, you think you got a need. And God says, oh no, I just need you to know that there's a supply somewhere that I've already been putting this stuff up for you. Can I tell you that if there's a need in your life, God's already got something going. There's already something stirring in that thing. And so there's folks, they think they need a bed. They don't need a bed. That bed's been sitting there waiting for them. We just had to know who you were to go give it to you. That's how God works. And so Jesus, He looks at His disciples after a couple of days pass, and He says, fellas, it's time to go. And this is a part of the story that we didn't even know was happening in verse 8. The disciples said to Him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you. And are you going there again? Well, that kind of changes the nature of the story, doesn't it? So the last time Jesus was in this very same area, He'd run into a little issues with some of the religious leaders. And they wanted to stone Him. And so now Jesus looks at His disciples. He says, fellas, it's time. We're going to Lazarus. And they're like, we don't think that's a good idea. Because the last time you were there, you just about got us killed. And He says, well, you know, Lazarus is sleeping. And I got to go wake him up. And I love the disciples because they're like, well, if he's sleeping, leave him alone and wake himself up. Just leave him alone. We don't need to go there. And Jesus looks at him and says, you don't get it. Lazarus is dead. And I got to go. And there's this part in Scripture. And I've always looked at it. It's kind of made me laugh a little bit. But the disciples, they look at Jesus. And in verse 16 it says, Thomas, he says, let us also go. So that we may die with Him. Y'all don't think that's funny, do you? It's like Jesus is determined that He's going, and Thomas looks at Him and says, great, let's go die with Him. Here we go. Now that would be funny if you knew the rest of the story, but honestly, they don't know what's getting ready to happen. Any of y'all ever been in a situation where you don't exactly know the outcome? And it feels like a dying, doesn't it? Yeah, do you know that if you obey without a promise, it feels like death to you? Oh, I'm going to slow down and say that again. If you obey without a promise, it'll feel like dying to you. You see, because you're obeying out of obligation. There's an obligation to follow Jesus at this point, and so they're following. But they don't understand what's getting ready to happen, and so there's no hope. And there's no joy, and there's no excitement. They literally think they are going to die, but yet they are following out of obedience. And I wonder how many Christians there are in the world who are following Christ or Jesus as best as they can, but they're doing it out of a sense of obligation. And you wonder so why it's so hard to get up on Sunday morning. Oh, I just went to meddling. But that's going to help you if you stick with me and don't get mad at me, okay? Because there's a lot of people that they think that going to church is an obligation. See, they don't have a promise associated with it. And so when the alarm clock goes off, they go, oh, Lord, I guess I got to go because if I don't, the washing machine may break. You know, the tire might get a flat. I guess I got to go. There are people who are serving. They're like, I guess I need to serve because I'm here and I think God expects me to do something. And it feels like dying when you're doing something out of obligation. Anybody ever done something out of obligation? There's probably a few people in the room that have trouble saying no to things. You know, you just don't like to tell people no, so you say yes to everything, and it feels like dying when you do it. Because you're like, I didn't want to do that. Why did I tell them yes? Why did I tell them I would keep the nursery? Right? Why did I tell them that I would go help on my day off? You know? Oh, Lord, here you go. There's a little bit. Hopefully that'll be enough. Man, that hurt. I wish I had it back. You know, everything's painful. Religion is painful, folks. I hope you don't have anything to do with it. It's painful because it's an obligation. And these guys are going because of an obligation, not because of the joy. So I would tell you, if there's anything you're doing in your Christian walk and it feels like a dying, like a burden, like a chore, I would say you need a promise associated with that thing. You need a promise. Jesus has been dropping promises on them, and they don't even know it. And I want to back up a little bit because he gives this phrase. You ever notice that there's a conversation going on and Jesus just says something completely off the wall? Well, they're talking about going back to this place and about dying, and all of a sudden Jesus starts talking about working. And I'm like, what in the world is he talking about here? It's verse 9 through 10. Look at it. Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in a day? And if anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of the world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him." Now, many commentators, they argue over what this means, and I'm just going to tell you in my study and in my prayer what I believe that this means. The disciples didn't want to go, but Jesus knew that it was going to be all right because he knew what the Father was doing. He said, "I do what the Father says. I say what the Father tells me to say, so I operate just hand in hand with what God is doing, the light." And he says, "When I do that, everything's fine." He said, "I'm going to go, and everything's going to be fine because I'm doing what God sent me to do. I'm on assignment, and I will complete it because God has given me an assignment." And so what he's saying is, I'm walking in the light. That's the safest place for me to be. Do you realize walking in the light of the will of God is the safest place you can be? Even if it's scary, even if it feels like you're going to get stoned, the light of God is the safest place to live. But the disciples, they weren't in the light. They didn't know what God was doing. They weren't in touch. And so it's darkness to them. And so I would tell you, walk in the light, because there's safety in the light. In fact, there's this cool thing that I was thinking about a week or so ago, is if you're driving a car, you can drive in absolute darkness and you can get all the way across the country with about 50 yards of light in front of you. You ever thought about that? You can get across the country. Now, you don't have light to see California, but you can get there with 50 yards of light. It is the same way in walking in faith with God. We would love for Him to shine a light from where we are to where we're going. But oftentimes He says, "You know what? If you'll just walk in the light that I give you, you can absolutely get where you're going." That was a good word, Kevin. Okay. All right. So then, He goes, and word gets ahead that He's coming. And so Martha, it says in verse 20, she goes out to meet Jesus, but it says Mary, she stayed at the house. I think Mary's feelings were hurt. Jesus ever hurt any of y'all's feelings? You know, you prayed and nothing happened. You expected God to do something and He didn't come through. And it's like, man, you know what? I don't even feel like going to church today. I'm so disappointed. Now, that's the real deal, right? There are times where you're like, you feel so defeated, you feel so discouraged that you're like, you know what? I just don't want anything to do with it. I don't want anything to do with church. I don't want to have anything to do with praying. I can't pray today. I can't pray about it. I'm just done. I think that's the situation that Mary's in. She's like, He was supposed to come and He didn't. I can't bring myself to go and meet Him. Martha, you go. And as Martha goes out, if you haven't turned yet, you really do need to turn to this, because Jesus walks Martha through something that I want you to see. I'm going to read a little bit of it, and I'm trying to get to verse 25, okay? But I'm going to start in verse 21. So Martha, in verse 21, she says to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. And even now, I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you." It's almost like faith or hope or something is stirring up inside of her. If you'll get along with Jesus, that's what will happen to you. She gets along with Him, and all of a sudden, faith or hope or something begins to stir because she says, I know that whatever you ask God, of God, God will give it to you. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And in verse 24, Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. You see, they had as much trouble about what happened when you closed your eyes in death as we do. You know, there are folks today, they don't know. They're like, what happens when you die? You know, is that the end? Is there life after death? What happens? Well, they were arguing about those same things back in Scripture. But Martha actually believes that there's going to be a resurrection. And she believes that it's going to be on the last day. And so she's looking for an event. Oh God, touch your word right now in everybody's heart. Look at verse 25, y'all. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Do you hear that? He said, I am the resurrection and the life. You see, she thought she was waiting for an event. Then he said, resurrection is not an event. Resurrection is a person. And I am him. Life is not something that begins and ends. It's not an event. Life is a person. And when I breathe life. I breathe life into humanity. You remember me in Genesis when I said, let there be light. I'm that guy. You remember when I breathed on humanity? I'm that guy. You want to know who I am? I am the resurrection. And I am the life. And as I look at that and I go, wow. Because there are many of us who would love to see someone raised from the dead. And in fact, if you're just visiting with us, we absolutely believe in the power of God. And we absolutely are pressing towards seeing those who, because I don't know about you, but I know many of the people here, we've experienced premature death in our lives, in our families' lives. And we don't believe that that's of God. So we believe that God still heals, and we believe that there is still power to bring people back to life. But I would tell you, I believe the key is right here. I got to go to the end of the story, okay? So Lazarus dies and he rises again, okay? Duh! But guess what? He died again. He died again. And so everybody's going to die. The question is, do you have resurrection life or not? You know? And I know that there are evangelists and they will tell you that you just better be careful because some of you might be sitting here and you don't know Jesus and you might go out there and you might try to cross that railroad track and get hit by a train and get killed. Any of you ever been to one of those evangelistic sermons? I get saved every time I go. Just to be sure. I'm kidding. The question is not whether or not a train is going to hit you or not. The question is, do you have resurrection life in you? Because if not, you're not truly alive. Do you hear me? There may be somebody here today. You're breathing. You can fog a mirror. You can do all those things, but you're not truly alive because you don't know the one that's given life, Jesus. You don't know resurrection life yet. And I want to tell you today that you can experience the most beautiful, most fulfilling, most I don't even know what I was going to say. I think it was powerful. Beyond words kind of life. But you can only find it in one place. Just one place. In Jesus. In Jesus. In Jesus. I don't know where you've been looking for it, but you can only find it in one place. In Jesus. And if you haven't met Him, I hope you won't leave here today before you find out that you can truly live. You can truly live. So He goes to the grave, and they're all around the grave. And He talks to him in verse 39 and He says, remove the stone. Remove the stone. See, we've read that so many times, it makes no big deal to us because we're like, oh, this is where it starts getting good. You know, just hurry up and move the stone away. That would literally be like someone that we love being buried and a couple of days later, me walking up to you and saying, dig him up. Wow. Literally, dig him up. And everybody goes, do what? Look, if you wanted that kind of thing to happen, you should have been here about 2 days ago. Huh? Dig him up. Do what? Dig him up. And everybody goes, oh my goodness. Martha, she looks at Jesus and she says, Jesus, but it's going to stink. Can I just go on and tell you that when God begins to move in power, the first thing that goes through your mind is, oh boy, he's stirring something up and it's going to stink. That's what happens when God moves in power. Is he starts stirring stuff up inside of us. And we're like, oh, don't go there. You know, oh man, I wanted freedom. But now you want me to roll the stone away on that area of my life and let some light shine on it? Oh, Jesus, if we do that, that's going to stink. Let's just keep the stone on that. And Jesus says, do you want resurrection life? Then roll the stone away. What I think he's saying to some of us, he's saying, then open your heart up. Because you got to open your heart before I can do the next thing. But there's some danger there, right? I can just imagine people. The women start crying. Can you just see them? The men are going, get him. He's done lost his mind. You know, and people will say the same things over you. When you begin to want to move in the power of God, people will look at you and go, he'll lost his mind. She has lost her ever-loving mind. Stop her. You know, stop him. But somehow you got to know. I think that's why Jesus was crying. I don't think he was crying over Jesus, over Lazarus being dead. I think he was so upset that he was in a room full of people that knew him and nobody knew what was going on. Nobody was in touch with God. And so he says, roll it away. And they roll it away. And Jesus speaks, and it says that he speaks loudly. And he says, Lazarus, come forth. I wish I had a good voice for that. Lazarus. And it just seems like it requires something right there. You know? Lazarus, come forth. There he comes. You see, what Jesus is doing is he's saying, you know, Martha, I told you that I was the resurrection and the life. I was preparing you for this because I'm making a deposit in your life that when I raise Lazarus from the grave, now you'll believe that I have resurrection life. But that wasn't the end of the story either, was it? Because one day, not too far from here, they're going to put Jesus in a grave. But guess what? That tomb can't hold him either. Why? Because he contains resurrection power. And if you're a Christian, we've always been a part of a faith that had resurrection power. And so they can put stones on you if they want to. They can put you in a tomb if they want to and seal it with whatever you want to. But we have a faith that has resurrection power. And just give us about 3 days and we'll rise again. You know? Huh? Huh? You got some problems. We come from a faith that says, you know what? We cannot be stopped when we walk in the will of God. Just give us a little bit. We're part of a chain of resurrection power. In 3 days, he was going to rise again. And he's telling us, you don't have to be afraid of death. You don't have to be afraid of dying. I know that there are those of us who have lost ones that we love. And you know what he says to us? You will spend more time with them than you will without them. And it is okay to grieve. Don't let anybody tell you that you shouldn't grieve. They were grieving. Why are they grieving? They're grieving because they've lost someone they love. That's what grief does. That tells you how much you love something. That tells you how much you love the person that you lost, how much you love the vision that died. It tells you that you're alive. But Scripture says we grieve differently than the rest of the world. We grieve with hope because we have resurrection life inside of us. And death is never final for us. And so we will spend more time with the ones that we love than we are apart. because of what Jesus Christ has done. So he's just making a deposit here. But then this last thing, let me share this with you. Lazarus comes forth in verse 44. It says, the man who had died came forth bound hand and foot with wrappings, and his face was wrapped around with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. I believe I have a word for this church right here on this very thing. I believe that many of you have experienced resurrection life. You have been saved. You have been set free. You have been delivered. You have experienced the power of God in areas of your life. But I believe that God is speaking to us today. If He's not speaking to anyone else, He's speaking to us today. And He's saying, but you need to take the grave clothes off. But you need to take the grave clothes off. Because you've experienced resurrection life, but you still walk around like you're bound. See, you aren't bound. You've been set free. You see, you aren't dead. You're alive. You see, you don't lack. You have the great supply. And I believe that God is speaking to this church today. And I'm going to tell you that I believe it is something that we're supposed to work on. In fact, I believe that the ground that we can take is in worship. And I want to ask you this today. If you have received resurrection life, if Jesus has touched any area of your life, could we not worship like that? Huh? Could we not? Now, there are people that say, look, that's not very dignified. That's not very dignified. That looks a little sketchy to me. I don't know if that's wise. I think you should be a little bit more reverent. I don't know about you, but I'm talking about a God who raises people from the dead. He heals people. I believe that requires a response in somehow equal measure to what is going on. I used to have a hard time going to the Carolina games. That was back when they were winning. Because I would cheer with all my might. But there was something inside of me that said, why don't you do that with me, Kevin? But you see what, though? I just needed a touch of resurrection life. Because now when I come in here, I tell you what, I can act like a fool if I need to. Because you know what I found out about the world? People are going to think you're a fool anyway. I'm sorry to break that to you. You know, I'm sorry to break that to you, but a lot of people think you're foolish anyway. You know, they're going to disagree with you and all that kind of stuff. So if I'm going to be a fool, guess who I'm going to be a fool for? For the one that's given me resurrection life. And so I want to challenge us today. Praise team, come on up here. This is a new day for us, okay? It's a day where we take the grave clothes off. It's a day where we start acting like what God has done in our life and we quit being afraid. We open up our hearts to God and we let Him come in and we let Him bring life and then we celebrate it. It says, therefore, many of the Jews who came to Mary and saw what He had done, they believed in Him that day. I want you to live with such resurrection life that they go, what has happened to you? And you go, oh, I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you asked. So we're going to sing this song. And I can't make you do anything. You have free will. But I believe that we are in a season in the life of our church where, folks, it's time to take the grave clothes off. It's time to be unbound. It's time to worship freely the God who has given us life. I find no better time to do that than right now. So anybody who will, stand with me. If you are listening to this sermon series and would like to have someone pray for you, or you'd like to ask some questions, you just need someone to talk to, please feel free to give us a call at 803-581-2070. Thank you.